everyone. Welcome back to All Crime, No Cattle. I am Shay, one half of this podcast, and the other one is over there. Her name's Erin. What's up, Erin?
Hi, Shay. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting excited for our end-of-the-month meetup over at the Fort Worth Yard at the Beer Garden and Dog Park. That's going to be a lot of fun. We're hammering down the details. I think we might have some door prizes for people that are going to show up, so make sure you get on that and be there available for some prize opportunities.
Yep, and that's going to be Saturday, March 30th at 6 p.m. We're going to be there, but more importantly, Nelson is going to be there.
Yeah, he's going to be there for sure.
So yes, we're all very excited about that, and we hope to see you there. Well, let's get right into this case this week. Our sources come from a few different places. The first are articles that feature this case that can be found online at the Doe Network and the Charlie Project. The next is a 2010 article by Erin Cargill from KXAN Austin News. This article can be found on the Wayback Machine, and even though it's almost a decade old, there are a lot of specific bits of information in this article that I couldn't find elsewhere, so that's a really important article. And then finally, this case was covered on Unsolved Mysteries. The first episode of it aired in February of 1995, and then it was later revisited in an episode from March 2010. This story comes to us from Lockhart, Texas, in Caldwell County, just about 30 miles south of Austin. The latest census for Lockhart states that the city has just under 13,000 residents, so it's a fairly small town, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have a lot going for it. For example, in 1999, the Texas legislature named Lockhart the barbecue capital of Texas, which is saying a lot for a state that's really proud of its barbecue.
Yeah, that's impressive.
There are four barbecue restaurants there: Chisholm Trail Barbecue, Kreitz Barbecue, Smitty's Market, and Black's Barbecue. During his presidency, Lyndon B. Johnson made a special request for sausage from Black's Barbecue to be served at a luncheon in front of the U.S. Capitol. So Secret Service members had to come to Black's Barbecue, watch over everything, make sure everything was on the up and up. Then they flew the sausage to Washington, D.C. for Lyndon B. Johnson and all of those famous politicians to get.
Yeah, Black's Barbecue is pretty famous.
It's clearly presidential grade barbecue.
Yep. And LBJ is from Texas. He knows his Texas
exactly.
Barbecue.
Lockhart's barbecue restaurants are so famous that according to their town website, an estimated 250,000 people come to eat barbecue there a year.
That's a lot of folks. That's a lot of beef getting thrown around.
That's right. But other than barbecue, Lockhart's other claim to fame is that many movies, TV shows, and commercials have been filmed there over the years. Some of these include What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Tornado featuring my man Bruce Campbell, The Newton Boys, Bernie, Machete, Transformers 4, and HBO's The Leftovers.
Transformers 4?
That's right.
That's the one that kind of sticks out in that group.
Well, in fact, the father of one of the people we'll be talking about today, Lee Wacker Higgins Sr., had a small role credited as the old man in 1981's Raggedy Man featuring Sissy Spacek, part of which was filmed in Lockhart.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he has an IMDb page and everything.
Wow. I've always dreamed of having an IMDb page.
Well, there's even a walking tour of Lockhart that you can take that will show you many of the different places of Lockhart that can be seen in these films and TV shows. So that actually sounds like a really great weekend. Go to Lockhart, fill up on barbecue, and then work some of it off on this walking tour.
Yeah.
I can dig it.
Why haven't we done this?
It sounds amazing. But the town of Lockhart is also known for something much more somber and much more mysterious. A long unsolved homicide slash missing persons case that has left investigators, Lockhart residents, and family members baffled for years. It was Christmas of 1993. Latricia White was a 38-year-old nurse who worked at Central Texas Medical Center in San Marcos. She was newly divorced and the mother of two children. Latricia's mother told KXAN Austin News that Latricia was, quote, a very sweet girl, very soft-hearted, gentle. She loved to help people, and she would just do anything for most anybody. Latricia had a new love in her life, a man named Lee Wacker Higgins Jr., who went by the nickname Dub. Lee was a 40-year-old truck driver who lived in Kingsville, Texas, which is a little southwest of Corpus Christi and about a three-hour drive south from Lockhart. Latricia and Lee had known each other since high school and had recently been reacquainted and began dating. Lee had moved in with Latricia, and they had been living together for about 6 months. Lee had a 9-year-old son named Chance, and he had also been through a divorce with Chance's mother, Gay, in 1990, about 3 years earlier. Gay had full custody of Chance, but allowed Chance to spend time with his father, especially around the holidays. Since it was just before Christmas, Gay allowed Chance to visit his father and Latricia in Lockhart on December 17th, with the agreement that Lee would bring Chance back Christmas Day. Now, according to some, Latricia and Lee had somewhat of a dysfunctional relationship. Lee was described as generally a nice guy, but some people indicated that he also had a mean temper. From everything I've seen and read, it doesn't seem like Lee was necessarily violent, but he would yell, he was possessive, and he frequently accused Latricia of being unfaithful. Lee and Latricia were known to get into squabbles and yelling matches, but they always ended up patching things up. On December 23rd, Latricia and Lee got into a major fight, which was witnessed by one of Latricia's friends. According to the segment on Unsolved Mysteries, Chance had accidentally left one of the faucets running and the sink overflowed. Latricia became angry at Chance, maybe even yelled at him a little, causing Lee to get upset at Latricia for scolding his son. The fight blew up to such a degree that Lee packed his bags, grabbed Chance, and stormed out. But by the time Christmas Day rolled around, it seemed as though they had reconciled and all was back to normal. Chance called Gay to ask her if he could stay a few extra days with his father, and she agreed. She said that Chance seemed happy and excited about his Christmas presents, and nothing at all seemed the matter. Gay told Chance to call her back later so they could arrange when Lee would drive Chance back to Gay's home in Kingsville. The day after Christmas, Latricia, Lee, and Chance were seen eating at a local restaurant. Witnesses said that the three appeared happy and normal, but this would be the last time any of them would be seen alive. The following day, Monday, December 27th, Latricia was scheduled for a shift at work, but she didn't show up, didn't call in, and wasn't answering phone calls. This was very unusual for her.
Yeah, it's not a good sign.
Well, worried, her father decided to stop by Latricia's home that evening to check on her. He entered her bedroom, and that's where he found his daughter lying in bed, dead. Latricia had been shot 6 times in the head with a .22 caliber gun.
Whoa.
Investigators found no defensive wounds on her body, and it appeared as though Latricia had been shot while sleeping. There were no signs of forced entry and no sign of a struggle, although investigators did note that the crime scene had been cleaned up in some way. Caldwell County Sheriff Dan Law told KXAN Austin News, quote, "It was cleaned up. Somebody had taken the time to clean something up before they left." However, beyond that, no specifics about how the scene was cleaned or altered have been released. Now, nothing appeared to be missing from the home either. That is, except for Lee and Chance. They weren't at the house, they hadn't returned to Kingsville, and no one could get a hold of them. The only evidence left behind was a child's footprint in Latricia's blood at the crime scene, suggesting that Chance had been in the home when Latricia was murdered or shortly thereafter. In the hours and days following the discovery of Latricia's body, a manhunt ensued to track down Lee and Chance. To investigators, what happened between their dinner on the 26th and the discovery of Latricia's body on the 27th was clear. Latricia and Lee had probably gotten into some sort of fight, and Latricia went to bed. Lee, still stewing, later crept into her bedroom and shot her to death. Then he grabbed his son, got into his truck, and went on the run. By the 30th of December, just 3 days later, multiple arrest warrants were issued for Lee Wackerhagen, including one for the murder of Latricia White. Another was issued from Kingsville for interference with child custody for the apparent kidnapping of Chance. The last was issued by the FBI for unlawful flight from prosecution. The same day, Lee's 1986 green Ford pickup truck was found abandoned in a field off Manor Road in East Austin, about 30 miles north of Lockhart. Inside the cab, investigators found Lee's wallet, checkbook, and a hunting rifle. The rifle had not been fired recently and was not used in Latricia's murder.
Okay. So it's probably not the .22 caliber pistol that we're thinking it is.
Exactly.
Also, that's really weird for him to leave his wallet and checkbook behind.
It absolutely is weird.
Hmm.
The back of the truck was filled with both unwrapped and wrapped Christmas presents, many of which were smeared with blood.
Really?
Yes. The immediate assumption was that this was Latricia's blood, but testing revealed it did not match her blood type. The blood was compared to Lee and Chance, but the tests were inconclusive. 4 months after Latricia's murder and Lee and Chance's disappearance, Gay's father, this is Chance's maternal grandfather, received a telephone call at his home. He said the caller said, "Help me," and then the call disconnected. Chance's grandfather believes that this phone call came from Chance, and it was Chance's voice on the call. However, the call was never traced, and the person who made the call has never been identified. Now, as happens frequently in these types of cases, people close to Latricia, Lee, and Chance took sides over what they believed to have happened. Lee's family contended that there was no way he was capable of murder, and that he and Chance must also be victims of foul play. They reasoned that there's no way Lee could be out there somewhere on the run from the law and would have never contacted them to let them know he was alive. And to a person, they all maintained that none of them had heard from Lee or Chance since their disappearance on or around December 26, 1993. Others, like Gay, insisted that Lee had killed Latricia and kidnapped Chance. Gay told Unsolved Mysteries that she had witnessed Lee's abusive behavior herself when they were together. Quote, "I saw that he was a good man when I met him, and when I left him, I was scared to death of him. He had a temper. He treated my oldest boy terribly, and I was scared." Later in 2010, she told KXAN Austin News, quote, "I believe Lee killed his girlfriend and took my son, and I believe his family knows something."
Well, that doesn't bode well, especially the previous marriage and him being aggressive and not treating her well and not treating his son well. That doesn't seem very good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you can really see where Gay is coming from, where she's like, well, we had this previous relationship. I can see him maybe being capable of doing this. That's really what she was saying in all of her interviews. And the thing is, she was backed up by investigators. They also seem to believe that Lee murdered Latricia and had been hiding out as a fugitive ever since with the help of his family. You see, a few years after his disappearance, Lee's family printed an obituary for him in the newspaper. Authorities thought this was suspicious. U.S. Marshal Hector Gomez told KXAN Austin News, quote, "It just comes right at us that, you know, if you want to make somebody dead, you put an obituary in the paper."
Yeah, that is weird. So they think he's getting some assistance and they're like covering it up and trying to help him out.
Yeah, I mean, they're not exactly coming out and saying it that much, but that's something that they're very strongly insinuated with some of the things that they're saying. Especially in this one article with KXAN Austin News.
Interesting.
Along those lines, Caldwell County Sheriff Dan Law told them, quote, "He's probably in Mexico somewhere, and that's just where all the signs lead to." But even though this conclusion may be the most parsimonious explanation of Latricia's death and Lee and Chance's disappearance, there are problems with it. If Lee was the killer, how could he have stayed off the radar for so long? He was just a normal guy, not some criminal mastermind. And Latricia's murder appeared to be spur of the moment, not something that had been planned, meaning there was no way he could have made any arrangements for his life as a fugitive with his young son. Even if we say that there was a possibility that Lee could still be in hiding after decades, whether or not he was helped by his family, what happened to Chance?
Yeah.
He was 9 years old at the time. He'd have clear memories of Latricia, of his mother, of his family, of being on the run. It's, of course, possible that Lee could have brainwashed him or sort of strong-armed him into never coming forward when he was a child. But today, Chance would be in his 30s. Why wouldn't he come forward knowing that his mother is still out there looking for him?
That's a great question.
Yeah. Now, some might even argue if Lee did kill Latricia, well, then the worst possibility is that he could have also harmed Chance as well. But no one, not even Gay, believes he was capable of harming his son.
Oh, okay. So he loved him that much and cared for him that much.
Yes, absolutely. So nobody believes that Lee would have actually harmed Chance.
Interesting.
So where are they?
Yeah.
Those are the questions that we have. And for years, the case of the murder of Latricia White and the disappearance of Lee and Chance Wackerhagen languished with no leads. That is until early 2016, 23 years later, when the case was promoted by the Texas Ranger Unsolved Crimes Investigation Team as part of a public awareness campaign that aimed to bring renewed attention to unsolved cases here in Texas. Investigators announced that they had since done a complete 180 about their suspicions against Lee. Authorities now stated that further evidence indicated that Lee and Chance were indeed both victims of foul play, and that Latricia's murder and their disappearances were the result of a crime of passion committed by someone close to Latricia, Lee, or both.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, well, I guess you're going to get into the reasons why the Texas Rangers believe that, but that is quite the turnaround.
Yeah, it is. And I would love to be able to tell you exactly what that new evidence is that vindicates Lee and Latricia's murder and suggests that Lee and Chance are missing persons and not fugitives from the law. But unfortunately, we don't know exactly what this evidence is. Hey, ACNC listeners, if you love true crime and getting your dessert on, then you need to check out Serial Killer Suites from San Antonio, Texas. Serial Killer Suites specializes in ginormous gourmet rice cereal treats that are to die for, with incredible flavors like cookies and cream, hot chocolate, peanut butter cup, and unicorn swirl.
Oh my gosh, these things are so tasty. She sent us the peanut butter one, a Nutella surprise one, and a peppermint bark one. They were all delicious. Really good.
My favorite one was the peanut butter cup. It comes with a smooth, creamy, sumptuous peanut butter layer on top. And then when you get into it, there's a peanut butter cup right nestled in there.
Surprise.
We also love the fact that Serial Killer Suites donate 10% of their monthly sales to local area nonprofits like the Humane Society and Thrive Youth Center, and that they're a proud LGBT-owned business. Now, if you're interested in trying one of the Rice Krispie Beasts, head on over to the website SerialKillerSuites.com or give them a call at 210-753-2032. Once you place your order, they'll be ready to ship anywhere in the U.S. in just 1 to 2 days.
And when you're ordering, make sure to use offer code ACNCFREE to get free shipping on your order. Take it from us. Do your taste buds a favor and check out Serial Killer Suites to get your hands on some sinful treats to feed your inner demons. Check out all the deliciousness over at SerialKillerSuites.com, and that's cereal with a C, like the breakfast food.
Investigators have been very tight-lipped about talking about what specifically this new evidence is or when it was obtained.
Oh, well, all right. Do you have any guesses as to what kind of information this might be or what direction they're going?
Well, there are a couple safe guesses that we can make about this sudden turn of events. You see, in 2010, it was reported that DNA testing was finally going to be done on the blood in the back of Lee's abandoned vehicle. We can guess that the blood was matched to Lee, Chance, or even both. And maybe this is clear evidence that they were harmed by someone else. But the thing is, we also know that, according to what investigators had stated earlier, there wasn't enough blood in the back of the vehicle to suggest that there was a serious life-threatening injury. So that still leaves us without knowing what exactly happened to Chance or Lee. On top of that, merely finding their blood in the back of the truck doesn't exactly prove anything with regard to Latricia's murder.
So what you're saying is it just means that either Lee or Chance might have gotten injured at some point after the murder of Latricia happened. But it doesn't mean that they're necessarily the killer.
Yeah, exactly. So this doesn't necessarily prove anything. So we know that this DNA evidence alone couldn't have provoked this kind of response from investigators.
Okay, so I also have a question about the .22 caliber weapon that was used to kill Latricia. Was that a weapon that was Lee slash Dubs? Did he own a weapon like that?
Yeah, there's nothing to show that Latricia or Lee owned a .22 caliber weapon. So where did it come from? Did it come from outside the house? You know, we don't know that. I'm sure investigators might have more information about that. But as far as I know, that's never been reported that either one of them owned a .22.
Okay.
As far as the type of weapon it was, I did see a few places report that it was from a revolver, but I have nothing really that confirms that. And so, you know, as far as was it from a rifle, was it from whatever kind of gun it could have been? I'm not exactly sure, but most likely a revolver. It certainly wasn't the rifle that was found in his truck.
Yeah, it seems like a up close and personal revolver, 5 shots to the head,
Six shots. So, okay. You know, if you're thinking of a regular handgun, that's a full clip unloaded into somebody as they're sleeping.
Boy, that is an intense crime of passion, if that's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's one additional piece of evidence that I haven't brought up yet, but it's very interesting. There was a 10-minute phone call that was placed from the car phone of Lee's vehicle sometime during that 3-day time period between Latricia's murder and when the vehicle was found abandoned.
Oh, wow. Okay, we're back in the time period of car phones.
That's right. It's 1993, baby.
Oh, man. Did you ever ride around with anyone who had a car phone?
No, I think we were all too poor.
Yeah, me too.
That's some fancy stuff right there. Now, just to be clear, this phone call is not the phone call made to Chance's grandfather. That happened about 4 months after the murder.
Okay.
This phone call is another mysterious one that we don't know who made it. Now, earlier, investigators relayed information about this phone call to the media as some kind of confirmation that Lee was alive and well and made this call to someone, perhaps to get help as he was on the run. But what if they went back and looked at this call, traced this call, and somehow ascertained information that suggested that the call was not placed by Lee, but by someone else in that pickup truck?
Okay, that would lead us to believe that they were not alone and there was a third party at least.
Yeah, and that's really kind of the only thing that I can think of is there's something that led them to believe that there was somebody else there in the truck or somebody else there at the house. And that's what has led them to do this complete 180 and realize that Lee was not the perpetrator of this crime.
Yeah, like the number that they called had no connection to Lee whatsoever, maybe to somebody else specifically that they were kind of looking at as a suspect, possibly, or there was some other evidence, like you're saying, back at the scene that leads them to believe that there was a third party.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Something like that, I think, is a good guess as to what it is that they saw that suddenly made them change their mind about this investigation.
It's interesting hunting down leads like this in a show when we're covering a case like this, because we're kind of doing our own little detective work as we're covering the show, trying to figure out where investigators are going at this point.
Yeah, and especially with a case like this that's unsolved, you know, we don't have all of the information. We have to piece everything together based on, you know, one statement here, one statement there, and try to figure out where the investigation is headed. And that's sometimes really hard to do.
Right.
So the reality is we just don't know exactly why or how investigators have changed their minds. But we do have, perhaps, another small piece of the puzzle. 2 years ago, an account that went by the name Gay posted a comment to a YouTube video entitled The Unsolved Case of Latricia White, Dark Matters Number 9, posted by Kaylee Elise. The video is a synopsis of the story about the murder of Latricia and the disappearance of Lee and Chance. This is what the comment says, quote, "I am Gay, the mother of Chance. Thank you, Kaylee, for doing this video on Chance. I just want to give a few updates on the case. I was contacted by a law enforcement officer on the case and met with him. He stated he started at the beginning and viewed all the evidence. He found a lot of discrepancies in the original investigation by other law enforcement divisions. As the meeting went along, he told me, by the evidence he uncovered, that my son Chance was dead along with Dub. He also stated the person that killed Latricia also did this unspeakable act. He gathered a group of people to search for the bodies, but to no avail. He has spoken to the local DA, but no charges can be filed until the bodies are found. I believe this to be true due to some of the facts he provided me. I hope and pray that someday someone will come forward and provide me with the whereabouts of my son Chance so I can bring him home. I pray for the person that did this, and I don't believe that person meant to kill Chance." So first, to be clear, we don't have any way to confirm that this account actually belongs to Gay, Chance's mother, but there have been other posts and other message boards and other places online that do suggest that Gay has been active online about talking about this case. So it does lead me to believe that this is credible. So if it is Gay, it seems like what she's alluding to is not necessarily that there is new evidence that suggests that Chance and Lee were victims of foul play, but that the early investigation maybe didn't catch certain things that they should have. After all, we know that Lee was charged with murder within 3 days of Latricia's death, implying that they perhaps didn't look into any other explanations. And if that's the case, it does make you wonder, if they had been looking for the abduction of two people from this murder scene instead, where would the investigation have led?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. And I think you can really understand Gay's frustrations. I mean, it sounds like investigators really enforced this idea that Lee murdered Latricia and kidnapped Chance. And that's probably what led Gay to say the things she said in interviews, you know? She was bolstered from the support and the information that she was being given by investigators.
Yeah.
And the reality is there may have even been some comfort in that for her, because at least she knew what happened based on what investigators had told her. But then years and years later, they tell her, we've been wrong all this time and we still have no idea where your son is.
That's heartbreaking. But also, you know, for the investigator's side and for detectives, often the simplest answer is the correct one. And the way that you led this whole thing up, to me, I was like, oh, okay, well, Lee slash Dub has done this thing and we're trying to hunt down Lee now. So, I mean, how many times do we do a case and that it's the husband?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I said earlier that that's the most parsimonious explanation for what happened to Latricia and what happened that night. Let's get into some examples of what actually could have happened now that we have this new information from investigators.
Okay.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. It seemed really that Dub did this horrible thing and then ran away with Chance and nobody's heard from them since.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we know that Lee may not be the true suspect here, what can we say about what happened on December 26th or the morning of December 27th? We know that there was no forced entry, so someone might have let this person or people into the house. Assuming that Latricia was asleep in bed at the time, this was probably either Chance or Lee. Alternatively, someone might have had a spare key to the home and entered that way. But either way, this suggests that whoever was there that night was known to the victims. And that's something that investigators have pressed now within these last few years when they've come out with this new information, that the person who did this probably knew them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah. Well, at some point, the killer or killers murdered Latricia and forced Lee and Chance into the truck and started driving north. Now, Lee was a very large man, but they could have forced him to comply by threatening to hurt Chance. And as far as vehicles are concerned, either the killer didn't bring his or her own vehicle to the house, or there was more than one person there to drive the other vehicle away.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. There could be two vehicles in this situation. We just don't have that other one.
Or, yeah, right. More than one person involved.
Yeah. Also, it begs the question, why not kill Lee then? If he's such a large, imposing figure, like that would seem to be, to me, that there would be some kind of answers there. Is like, you need Lee kept alive as opposed to Latricia for a reason.
Yes, that's an absolutely good point. That's really the major question here is, who was the target? Was it Latricia? Was it Lee? Was it Chance? Or was it all of them? And it's impossible to know. The fact that Latricia was killed outright might suggest that she was the intended victim, and the killer was left not knowing what to do with Lee and Chance. And maybe the whole purpose behind taking Lee and Chance was to implicate Lee in Latricia's murder. Or, as you're suggesting, it's possible that Lee was actually the target, which is why Latricia was dispatched so quickly, and Chance, again, could have been used to force Lee to comply with their demands.
Yeah, that seems like the more likely scenario to me, just personally. It seems like it's much easier to go along with that.
Sure, but it still begs the question, what did they need Lee for? And the only thing I can come up with is maybe somebody out there thought Lee had money?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm thinking that Lee has some sort of safety deposit box, some cache of valuable coins and a coin collection that someone's heard about, something like that, along those lines, where they need him to get access to something.
And I think that's a really good hypothesis. The only thing that I kind of question about that is when they took Lee and Chance, they went north. If they were looking for a safety deposit box or money in a bank somewhere, you'd think they would have headed south back to Kingsville, which is where Lee was from.
Mm.
I don't know why they would have gone to Austin. But then again, we don't know where that truck went for those 3 days. We don't know how long the truck was there before it was actually found. So these are all really good questions. The other thing that is mysterious about this is, remember, Chance was supposed to have already been gone by the time all of these events took place. Lee was supposed to have already taken him back home to his mother in Kingsville.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that earlier. He was already scheduled to be back home for Christmas festivities, right?
There's definitely a chance that if somebody was close to this family, knew Chance was supposed to be gone, that they were trying to do all of this to avoid hurting Chance, not realizing that Chance had decided to stay with his father for a few extra days. So he definitely could have just gotten in the mix of all of this.
Interesting. So maybe there was some kind of plan or ruse that was supposed to happen, not expecting Chance to be there.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, if we're under the assumption that this was somebody close to the family, somebody who mm-hmm. knew them, somebody who might have heard, oh, Chance is going back home on Christmas.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And, you know, finally, we also have that phone call made to Chance's grandfather. As horrific as it is to think that someone would pull a prank on the family of a missing child, we know that it happens. I know. It's so disturbing.
There's also cases like Robert Ben Rhodes where we know those are real leads.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. If that was Chance, then it means that he was alive and well months after this abduction. But the honest truth is there's no way for us to tell either way, at least based on the information that we have.
Yeah, that's tragic, man.
And we don't know what it is investigators have to lead them one way or another.
But if you're that grandparent, I mean, that is haunting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You're just still left wondering, like, are they still alive? Mm-hmm. Like, were they alive at that time? Was it someone trying to pull something over on me? You know, it could have been them. Ugh, that's horrible.
And is this person still close to the family?
Yeah.
Are they a family friend?
Which one of you did this?
Yeah. Christmas of this year will mark the 26th anniversary of the crimes. That's 26 years Gay has had to live without knowing where her son is or if he's even alive. 26 years of pain for Lee's family, a family who were implicated by law enforcement in helping Lee remain a fugitive wanted for murder and child abduction. And that's 26 years that Latricia's family, friends, and her two children have grieved without justice for her murder. At the time of the disappearance, Chance Wacker Hagen had blonde hair and blue eyes and a small dimple in his right cheek. He was born September 2nd, 1984, and would be 34 years old today. Lee Wacker Hagen was about 6'4" tall and weighed around 250 pounds. He was born on September 19th, 1953, and would be 65 years old today. Lee had blonde hair that may now be gray, wore glasses, and wore a mustache at the time of his disappearance. He has scars on both of his arms and on his right leg. He also went by the nickname Dub. And if you want to view pictures of Chance and Lee, both at the time of their disappearance, and we also have a couple of age-progressed photos of the both of them, what they might look like today, please view all of our social media accounts. We'll have those posted as well. Kingsville Crime Stoppers has a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of Latricia White's killer and for information regarding the whereabouts of Lee and Chance Wacker Hagen. Anyone with information can submit an anonymous tip at 1-877-553-2374 or go online to www.tipsubmit.com. You can also submit tips through the Texas Rangers Cold Case website or by contacting the Missing Persons Clearinghouse at 1-800-346-3243.
Man, I really hope that somebody does do that. I've always just thought, you know, what heroes would be people to speak out? If you knew something that turned into an arrest in one of these cases, like how awesome would that be? You know, and I think Crime Stoppers is an amazing organization that does a lot with their reward system and getting the message out there on a lot of these cases that we still don't have answers to.
Yeah. There's somebody out there that knows something about what happened that night and what happened to Chance and Lee. And think of all the families that are just left in turmoil right now. It would be really nice to know, at the very least, what happened to Lee and Chance and where they are.
Yeah.
To give their families at least a little bit of peace.
That is a crazy, mysterious case.
I know. It's very odd.
But, you know, there are a lot of vanished and missing people every year in the United States, and Chance and Lee are just one of these types of stories.
Yeah, that's right.
But fortunately, maybe we can make an example of this case and try and get some kind of answers moving forward. Hopefully one day we'll have an answer to what happened to Lee and Chance.
I certainly hope so. Yeah. And we'll definitely keep our eyes out in case there is any additional news that breaks sometime in the future.
Yeah. Good job, dude. It's a very sad but interesting case. Fascinating in many ways. But are you ready for a little switcheroo, a little change of pace, a little something good?
I definitely am.
Well, it's also topical.
Oh.
All right. Well, we'll be back with some good news right after this. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are in the good news segment, and I got a humdinger for you. It was recently International Women's Day. Aaron, go women, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got some...
I sounded so blasé about that. Mm-hmm.
Well, we got some really good International Women's Day news from NASA, of all places. They just announced that they will be conducting the first all-women spacewalk. You know, this is one of those things where I'm kind of ignorant, and I was thinking, like, this should have already happened. Like, this should already be a thing, right? Well, WPVI Action 6 News out of Philadelphia reports that it's almost been 35 years since July 5th, 1984, that the first woman cosmonaut, Svetlana Svitskaya, did a solo spacewalk. And she was the first woman to do a solo female spacewalk. So it's been a long time coming. So fast forward until today, and there still hasn't been a full, complete female team of spacewalkers, either on a shuttle or the International Space Station. Well, NASA has aimed for a March 29th date, and there will be an all-female team, and that's with two astronauts outside of the International Space Station and one Canadian Space Agency flight controller in Houston at the Johnson Space Station Center. And these astronauts will be Anne McLean and Christina Koch, who will be outside the space station, and Kristen Fecoyle, that will be overseeing the mission back in Houston. So it'll be a three-part all-female team. And NASA says that the mission plans to conduct work on the exterior parts of the International Space Station that need some maintenance and some fixing. They will be conducting science experiments out there, as well as testing out some new fancy equipment. Now, although McLean and Koch have been astronauts since 2013 and served on multiple mission crews to the International Space Station, neither of them have actually done an exterior walk. So this will be both of their first walks. And that seems scary on its own. But you know how, like, when we were kids, I think you were the same way. Like, when people would ask you, like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Both of us were probably, like, astronauts.
I mean, I still want to be an astronaut.
I do, too. Do you remember on Nickelodeon when they would do Family Double Dare? You remember, like, one of the prizes was you could end up going to space camp and you could learn how to be an astronaut and all that kind of stuff? Man, that was my dream, was to go on Double Dare and win that and go to astronaut camp. Koch and McLean actually did it in real life, and they were selected out of two of the biggest classes in NASA's history of 6,000 people in their graduating classes. So these ladies are some elite astronauts. Now, they are both currently serving on Expedition 58, which will take the walk, like I said, later this month. And NASA says that these women have a bright space future ahead of them, and they plan to reinstate McLean and Koch as part of the next two International Space Station missions, 59 and 60. And as Action 6 News reported, this will be yet another moment in space exploration history that will be one small step for woman and one giant leap for womankind.
I love it.
There you go.
I've often wondered if I have what it takes to become an astronaut, but I'm really lazy and I don't know if I'm smart enough. So man, I am incredibly impressed by anybody doing any of those things. It would be so scary, but I don't think there's a more amazing experience you can have than going into outer space.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
there's just not.
That seems like a really, really amazing thing. Also, you have to be like an amazing mathematician or a chemist or an engineer, awesome at physics, one of those things, or all of them. Like, mm-hmm. if you're going to be a commander, you have to be good at a lot of those things.
Yeah, and you have to be, like, in tip-top physical and mental condition. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be, like, a perfect specimen of humankind, which is why I probably never would have made it, but I like to dream.
Yeah, and I think we need to get back to a point where we imagine these people as the best of the best, like you said, and are heroes, which they are kind of like superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyways, there you go. That's an awesome story for ladies all around the world, and happy International Women's Day.
Whoop whoop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we have a recommendation for you this week, and that is going to be the podcast Dumb and Busted. It's a conversational true crime comedy podcast, and it's two really funny ladies, and sometimes they have guests on the show, and they do one segment where it's like a criminal genius, and then another segment that follows it up about a criminal, what's the opposite, idiot?
Yeah, moron.
A dum-dum.
Dumb and Busted.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a funny show. I saw somebody reviewed it and they said it was like the Darwin Awards of true crime podcasts, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So if you guys like that sort of thing, if you like, you know, a little bit of comedy, a little levity in your true crime, definitely check them out. And here is their promo right here.
Dumb and Busted Pop Quiz Hotshot.
Kay, hit me.
A pervy arsonist who has a weird thing for men's shoes.
Episode 5, Firestarter.
Yes. Twins who box for work and murder for fun.
Episode 42, Cray Cray.
Yes. Last one. Creepiest creeper who terrorizes a family with handwritten letters.
Episode 39, Watch Out.
Hell yeah. For true crime stories of insane stupidity and exceptional genius, listen and subscribe to Dumb and Busted on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, guys, welcome to the after show, and we're going to be reading off some names of our brilliant patrons who we love so much. But before we do, we wanted to remind everyone of our brand new Facebook group. We just started it, what, a little over a week ago?
Oh, yeah, our discussion group. It's going great.
We are having fun. You know, there's only one rule. Don't be a butthead.
Yeah, there's a couple of rules. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much that's just follow that's that and rule. You're fine in life and online.
Yeah.
You big fat jerks.
But you can also find all of the threads for each episode where people comment on what they think about the episode and questions that they have. Extra bonus stuff is in those threads. What else we got going over there? We got people putting out really neat crafts that they do. We got a whole craft mega thread. We have a pod fam thread, which is all of our pods that are friendly with us. We have all their links in a thread. It's a lot of fun.
So you should be able to find that somehow. I don't know. You guys are smart. You can figure it out. And you can also find us on Twitter at ACNC Podcast and on Instagram at All Crime No Cattle. And you can send us an email at allcrimenocattle@gmail.com.
You can also find all of our awesome merchandise at threadless.com/allcrimenocattle.
I think that's about it, love.
And all of our bonus material is on our Patreon site. At patreon.com/allcrimenocattle.
Yeah, and speaking of which, you got some Patreon names that we gotta read.
That's right, and you know, every episode we owe it to our four awesome producers who are Texas Rangers. We gotta shout them out. That's Lisa Layton,
woo-hoo!
Michelle Guess,
ah!
Andrew Margerison,
aye, 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 aye!
Mel Thomas.
Woo, woo.
That's right. Thank you, guys. We couldn't do this without you, and we love our Texas Rangers. But now, this episode, we're going to be moving on to our Lone Guns. We did Small Town Sheriffs last time. So Lone Guns, this time around, we got Karen Alden, Ginny Cargill, Claire Jeans, one of our oldest supporters from Australia. Claire, love you, Claire. Connie Gibson, Christina Snyder, Allison Forver, our fun name Uber Chick Polish, Allison Moon, Lauren Miller, Diachondra Hapsari Subagayo. I think I got close. I probably butchered that. I'm sorry. That's the best I can do.
I'm going to go ahead and apologize in advance for any of these mispronunciations because I'm sure it's raggedy.
Well, you can do it next time then. Megan Jirai, The Dark Poutine Podcast, Mary Alice Cafiero.
Oh man, you're losing it.
Stacy Wolf, Weg Leitner, Marshall Bingham, Coral Baish, Jeremy Thomas, Amanda Newman, Alice Lynch, Emily Hesch, Anne Nunnally, Sam Marshall, The Gone Cold Podcast, Mariel Ekholm, our t-shirt winner from Sweden, A.R. Feuchtwaggle.
I love me some A.R. Feuchtwaggle. It's my favorite name we have.
Emily Blassingame and Pam Sullivan. Thank you guys, our lone guns. They're wild and untamed, just like their names.
Whew, okay, well, that was the first time we did last names as well. Hopefully you guys liked it. Hopefully Shay got close.
Man, if I butchered them, hopefully you enjoyed how much I butchered your name.
Hey,
Let me know.
Technically, a lot of people still don't know how to spell your name when they write
it. Oh, dude, you want to talk about butchered names? When I go anywhere and I have to put my name down, every to-go delivery, it's like an anxiety attack for me. And Aaron always yells at me, tell him how to spell it. And so I have to tell him, you know, how to spell my name. I get all kinds of weird variations. Shia is the biggest one. Aaron thinks that one's funny. Yeah. Well, that's all we got this week around. We'll be back here pretty soon. We'll see you guys on the other side. But until then, always remember that crime is bigger in Texas, y'all. Adios.
Bye.